Ukraine calling.
People from poorer countries like Ukraine moving to richer countries like Germany with 10 times more average income. It's very, very difficult to get those back.
50% were absolutely sure they will return. Now it's just 26. Dreams about like nice life in some developed Europe and like you did not like Ukraine at all and never trusted in the future of the country.
I remember how I was awakened because of the rockets, because of the military planes.
In Czech Republic, it's easier to earn money.
They could have left even if, for example, it was not a war.
This is not good.
Ukraine Calling.
Hello, everyone. This is Brian Bonner, host of Promosky Radio's Ukraine Calling. Anybody who's lived in Ukraine during the war knows that this is a completely different country since the full-scale invasion more than 2 years ago. A lot of good things have happened in terms of how Ukraine's become stronger and more self-reliant. But war mostly brings bad things. And if you walk around the streets of Kyiv, the capital, where we're broadcasting from, it's a bit lonelier place. We have the soldiers at the front fighting for our survival and fighting for the nation's survival. And then we have a whole category, millions of them, who are just simply not here. People who left because of the war or because of economic reasons or a combination of the both. And fortunately, we have with us in the studio Gleb Wyszelinski. He's the executive director, longtime executive director of the Center for Economic Strategy. He's an economist, veteran social researcher, policy analyst, and he's been studying the refugee situation, his organization, very closely. Welcome, Gleb.
Hello, Brian. Thank you for inviting.
Before we run through the summary, I'd like to ask, how did you... This is like your third report.
Yeah.
How did you decide that this is an issue we need to follow?
When full-scale invasion started and we saw like this wave of refugees coming from Ukraine and then like situation stabilized somehow in the summer of 2022, we understood that millions of people are out of Ukraine. Nobody knows like which is exact figure. That time, United Nations organizations that were in charge of putting together these figures were not good enough. Figures were very different, from 4 million to 8 million. Also, there was no representative service of refugees. Some countries organized it in Poland. In Germany, some agencies surveyed refugees on border crossings. However, there was no representative survey. And the problem with having no representative survey was that you really could not understand what are intentions. Because why we decided to work on it. We are economic policy think tank and certainly... We needed to understand what could be potential impact on economy of refugees returning or not returning. So we already in 2022 designed this study, got financial support from International Renaissance Foundation for the first wave, and we conducted our first big survey in November, December 2022. And a lot of people could ask, listening to me, how you managed to build a representative sample. We came together with our Poland partner InfoSapiens company with idea. Sometimes it looks like a fantasy world, when you have such a war in 2022, 23, 24, with new technologies and still trenches, etc. But what was good in it was that especially with high penetration of internet banking and mobile banking in Ukraine, most of refugees retain their Ukrainian mobile numbers. That means that together with Ukrainian mobile operators, Kyivstar and Vodafone, we just sent random invitations to those subscribers of these mobile networks whose phone were registered abroad. We put quotas by countries, by number of these SIM cards that were active in each country. And then, like, you understand, like, how it works. Like, it comes as SMS, but, like, on a modern smartphone, it's just very easy just to click on the link and then, like, go to online survey. So we did it this way for all three waves. And the latest wave was conducted in December 2023, January 2024. So 2 months ago, it was finished, and then we came with our third report with the conclusions. What are the current intentions, and what could be an impact for economy?
So this is very fresh, and you're telling me you're very confident in your numbers and your methodology.
The biggest problem is in fact, like, there is a term called panel study, when you have, like, the same respondents in all waves of the survey. We do not have such a panel. So we, each time we survey randomly selected Ukrainian refugees abroad. It means that, like, for example, when we come with our main figures, like, what is the share of those who are absolutely sure that they will return to Ukraine, they are different respondents. And it means that, for example, like, if we see that in December 2023, there are less people who are sure they will return to Ukraine compared to December 2022, it doesn't mean that those people who were there in 2022, all of them decided to stay in their new countries. It also means that, like, some of those who were willing to return have already returned, and they are not in the universe, right, not in the sample anymore.
It's very interesting. You know, I've read it a few times. It's an excellent report, and so I highly recommend it to people. It's in both English and Ukrainian languages. Can you walk us through the highlights? And I particularly like that you have optimistic and pessimistic scenarios. So, whatever mood you're in, this report is for you, but take it away.
Firstly, we decided again to cross-check numbers from the United Nations. For a long time, we trusted this data, and we generally were sticking to the figure of over 6 million Ukrainian refugees. However, like, now, as we cross-checked it with data from border services from both Ukraine and all neighboring countries, like democratic neighboring countries, we came with understandings that, in fact, like, this 6 million everybody is talking about is an overestimate. Our estimate, we have 4.9 million Ukrainians who came from Ukraine to other countries because of the war, and from this 4.9, 3.6 are in democratic countries, 1.3, like, we stick here to the United Nations estimate, are in Russia and Belarus. Like, why do we have this difference? Because like, listener could say that such a strange data. I saw data from Eurostat that, like, there are over 4 million refugees only in the European Union. The problem is that, in fact, the Ukrainians were moving a lot between European countries, mostly between Poland, like, from Poland to Germany, but also to some extent from Italy, for example. They were moving to smaller countries. Some people moved, to United Kingdom, to Scandinavian countries, also to Canada and to the United States. And they are still counted in their first country in many cases. Like, for example, Italy. Italy is not crossing out people who.
Right.
Who are not, like, showing any, like, sign of existence in the country. Like, with Poland, for example, if somebody left to Ukraine, like, they have some calculations, but, like, not certainly not to Germany. There is no exchange of data. So it's, like, one is good news that we have just 4.9. And also, what is important to understand, that Before full-scale invasion, Ukrainians were very active labor migrants.
Right.
And we did our own estimate in 2018. When our estimate was that on any given day, approximately 2.5 million Ukrainians are working abroad.
Before the war, before the full-scale war.
Yeah, before full-scale war. As a change, we see currently much less children. For example, in the first wave, we had over 50% of refugees being children, because like when it comes from our survey, we survey only adults, but adults are asked about their family, including like all children, for each child we have age, is he or she studying, etc. Decrease of the share of children is a rather strong signal that people who moved in the first months of invasion, and generally March 2022 was the sort of peak months of people going out of the country. So people who wanted to return to Ukraine, who had stronger ties to Ukraine, and who moved mainly because of security reasons, and they were with children because like they were moving because of security reasons, some of them are back in Ukraine.
Good news.
However, it means that on their place came people who came mostly as we call them quasi-labor migrants, those who had experience working abroad, who also use this de facto freedom, free movement of people within European Union to get opportunities abroad, be it job or education, etc. Plus, we saw increase of adult military age men in our survey.
But still not the majority.
No, not the majority. Among adults, we have 72% of women.
Women.
And among all, including children, we have 65%. And still, the biggest single group is women aged 35 to 42, 13%, who are clearly mothers who came with their children.
Okay, so the biggest segment is women 35 to 44.
Yeah, becoming much less a single portrait. It was never a single portrait. In fact, very important, a striking conclusion, from your newspaper experience, as a headline, one strong figure, etc.
Right.
But conclusions, which is more important for policymaking and for trying to understand who are refugees, so that we never had this single portrait of woman with child or children,
right,
with one or two bags moving these bags via railway station and in Przemysl and trying to find the way. Now, from the very beginning, we had a very significant segment, and it's still here in place in the last wave. People who came from areas that were really dangerous, be it settlements that are occupied by Russians, or settlements where there were active hostilities. Just today, I had a request from deputy minister in one of the ministries to calculate the share of those people who came from oblasts where we had active hostilities or occupation, and who said as a question, answering to the question, whether they had this as experience in their settlements, active hostilities or occupation. And we came with a figure of 30%. So there are 30% of refugees who really came from really dangerous areas.
Makes
sense. From occupation. And
may have lost their house even.
Yeah. And in this case, on one side, you could make a conclusion that it will be very complicated to get these people back, except of very rapid, fortunate deoccupation of areas, etc. On another side, among those people, we have higher share of those who never wanted to go abroad. and who are staying abroad, especially we speak about older people, not just very old people, but generally like people over 50.
My age category.
Yeah, who have or had their property, who had their job, who had their history, and generally, like with right support of international partners and right government policies, they could go back to Ukraine as IDPs, going to safer areas.
I'm a lawyer, and I was working as a lawyer before in Ukraine in Kyiv. But then when the full-scale war has started, I just remember how I was awakened because of the rockets, because of the military planes. Russian tanks came through Victory Avenue to Kyiv near my metro station, Berestechka Chernivtsi. Nobody proposed us real help in the first months. No weapons, no money, no some kind of support. This is why, because of all these reasons, I was left totally alone, only with my parents, all my colleagues. At that point, I was working in IT company as international contract lawyer. And when I heard that even colleagues are already not in Ukraine, then I just realized that I need to be responsible for myself and for my mother. And if it's already coming to Kyiv, I wanted to defend myself and my mother. So we decided to go on evacuation train.
I have left 2 months in advance. War was the reason, but not the war which is now, but the war in the year 2014. Because I'm originally from Donbas, and in the year 2015, I have decided that I would like to leave the country. Because I thought it as an opportunity for the future, is that it will be worse and worse. And I think that I didn't make a mistake. In the year 2016, I became a mother, so I had a little child, so I couldn't leave. So I decided to wait till my daughter will be a little bit bigger and I will be possible to live with her. But my husband, he decided to leave for a job, and he just chose Czech Republic, and he was offered with a good job in České Budějovice.
The top three countries, Germany, Poland, Czech Republic, no surprise there. Outside of Europe, United States, United Kingdom, Canada, also no surprise there in terms of the largest share. All Ukrainian refugees in Europe have legal protected status for 3 years, right till March 2025.
Yeah.
You had found in your study that they're gradually reducing their benefits. Is there a feeling, and I know we both read the same Economist story, that Ukrainians, they're appreciative that European countries are so welcoming of Ukrainian refugees, but they would like them to come home too and help the country. What are you sensing about trends in European policy towards letting people stay? Because as you know, I mean, apparently there are studies that show like people from poorer countries like Ukraine moving to richer countries like Germany with 10 times more average income. It's very, very difficult to get those back. Where do you see European policy going on?
Oh, it's very different in different countries. Like even if you look on two largest countries, Germany and Poland, they are absolutely different. For example, Germany invests a lot in language training and like the sort of adaption skills and knowledge and professions that person had before becoming refugee into like labor market in Germany. That's why like Germany is paying rather significant social payments to those who are still on this adaptation courses, including at least half a year of language training. So that, like, for example, if you were a teacher in Ukraine, like they will do everything possible so that you will become firstly assistant teacher and then like teacher in German school, because like they have deficit of teachers. But certainly, like as in any country, like and among Ukrainians as well, like there could be people who are not so active in like looking for jobs and who will like be staying on welfare for longer. And certainly Germany will use their tools that they have also for Germans, if they stay too long in unemployed status, to push them into job market.
I miss Ukraine very much, and I understand that Germany has lots of its own problems, especially in Berlin, and people here are very, very different, and they cannot see at all the perspective which have Ukrainians on why this war is happening. They do not understand, and there are a lot of Germans who are ignorant, or either ignorant or support Russia, or just not care about, and it's the most comfortable country for Ukrainians are Ukraine, where you in yourself in a comfort zone in the sense of mind, say in the sense of thinking, where they set our values, what we are fighting for. We understand our aims, we understand why we help each other. We understand that we want to share and to take the path of the European Union and NATO and not the path of Russia and post-Soviet countries who do not share European values and so on.
Poland is a sort of like fully libertarian in the sense, like they did not have any policy towards refugees because they did not have like Syrian wave of refugees earlier, and they just like took Ukrainians, like gave them legal protection, gave them access to schooling and healthcare. Gave the standard similar to Polish citizens assistance, monetary assistance for children, and that's all. So you could, for example, like if in Germany, like you have a child, this child must go to school in Germany. In Poland, like nobody cares. Like, for example, there could be a family that like uses safe skies of Poland and like being in safety there, but like virtually be fully in Ukraine. For example, mother working remotely for the Ukrainian company, child studying remotely in his or her Ukrainian school, and they just use roads, like healthcare system, police, etc., and no other services.
Well, we have deep roots. I mean, Ukrainians do, because even before the war, that was a popular country for migrants. So, I mean, do you agree generally with the proposition that the longer they stay, the less likely they are to come back?
Generally, yes. Like, we see that, like, yes, we have this factor of, like, those who have returned already, like, they are not in the sample anymore, and that's why, like, there are less people who are willing to return. However, we have another question asking those, like, who were surveyed, like, how their plans changed. And we have like multiple alternatives. Like they decided like to stay in the new country for less time. They decided to stay there for a longer time. They decided not to return to Ukraine while previously they were thinking about returning to Ukraine. So generally, trends are negative among those like who were surveyed. Like, they generally decided like to stay there for longer. Plus, like, you have just very rational things. The children are integrated, like they know language, like they got new friends, mothers and sometimes fathers, they got jobs, they are integrated into labor market. Plus, like, for example, if we speak about group of young women, there could be marriages like with locals, and it will mean that chances of them returning to Ukraine become very low.
You even put numbers on it. I mean, you said in the best case, 1.4 million will remain outside of Ukraine. And that's the best case or the optimistic scenario. The other scenario is 2.3 million. Neither figure is very encouraging, actually. This is a lot of people.
From those 3.6 that are in democratic countries. Because like we did not survey those right. who are in Russia and Belarus. Sense. Certainly like some share of them like could return, but like we don't know like what is this share, and like we could generally expect that like the share will be lower. Certainly like some people like had to go to Russia, but like those who were the most pro Ukrainian, if they have money, they could go to Europe. There are some people who are pro-Ukrainian, but who did not have money to like use this complicated routes to go to Europe. Maybe like they will return to Ukraine. Going back to people who are in democratic countries, like yes, so you're right. From 3.6, in the best scenario, we will get a majority of them, like 2.2, back to Ukraine. In the worst scenario, only like 1.3 will return.
That's 40, almost 40%.
So generally, like if we look on optimistic and pessimistic scenario, like what changed in between like our waves? So like in the first wave, like this middle ground was like slightly higher than 50%. So like in like the sort of baseline scenario, slightly more than like 50% of those who are abroad will return.
Ukraine calling.
I see my future back in Ukraine because I went through different personal transformations and I needed time to figure out how I will develop myself in the future. My parents, my sister, my grandmother, they're all living in Kyiv all this time. I also have all my friends and my apartments in Kyiv. For me, it's very important to be with my family. I already get used to insecurity in Ukraine, and I already, during the war, I was already in Ukraine 2 times, and I plan my next trip to Ukraine, to Kyiv. I also will make an excursion for a few German people who will go with me to Ukraine in August. I have lots of friends who even didn't try to leave Ukraine. When the full-scale war began, they were in the west of Ukraine, or they just moved to west of Ukraine. They absolutely have no idea what they will do, and they just, I wouldn't say that they stick to the flow, but they try different things in order to find them. And some people want to stay in Berlin, in Germany, some people want to stay in other countries, some people plan to come back in 2 or 3 years when it will be more secure, some people will come as soon as possible, some people already back at home, for example, in Odessa.
I was in Ukraine and I had this feeling, I can't explain it, but I had the feeling that I won't come back. Don't tell your children, it's not our home, we will come back or something like this, because no one knows what is going to happen. And children, they take it differently than we adults. It's very hard to say for me what I'm missing, because now for me, missing, it's when you think that something will come back, but nothing will come back. Because I don't know that Ukraine, which is now. I remember Ukraine before war. I have never been in Ukraine since that time the war started.
Socially, this is not good for Ukraine, the more people who don't come back. I mean, I know you point out the plus side that de facto Ukraine becomes more integrated into the European Union, and so the plus side could be it might speed up the day when Ukraine is a full member of the European Union. Then you can live anywhere in Europe that you want. But you're an economist. What are the economic consequences of not having these 4.9 million people?
We had this estimate, and it's rather significant. It's generally from we will lose each year from 4 to 6 in different scenarios, 4 to 6% of GDP. If we speak about attrition war, then if we do not have this production and consumption production is linked to consumption, because like if there is no demand, like in many cases there is no supply, then like we have less taxes, and then we will have less capacity to withstand Russian aggression.
Even there, you had, optimistic 3.6% of GDP, gross domestic product, and pessimistic
over 6.1%.
What is the figure? I can't remember off the top of my head. You said there was a decline in the percentage of people who said they will come back or are likely to come back.
We had this one question besides like a lot of complicated analysis that we did that show is the most clear and direct the most clear and direct question that could be used for this analysis. So we, in the first wave, we had, I'm just cross-checking it, 50%, which is really 50%, which is like 40.
They will come
back. 50% were absolutely sure they will return. Now it is 26.
Dropped from 50 to 26.
Yeah.
This is not, and you even had, part of the survey was, I believe, of those who said they wanted to come back, like more than half of them said that they would not do it until the war is over. Is that right?
Yeah. And that's, I hear this pessimism in your voice, really you also need to still come back to this sampling thing that some people who left in early months of aggression are already there. Already back in Ukraine, and some who left because of, for example, job opportunities abroad, they could have left even if, for example, it was not a war starting in 24th of February 2022, but for example, introduction of free movement of labor within the European Union. Just because they wanted to go abroad and have a better job opportunity.
About job, I think that my life maybe abroad in Europe is different than the life of other people because I do the same job. I was in a hairdresser in Kyiv. I worked for myself. I'm a hairdresser in Czech Republic. I work for myself. Financially, my last 2 years in Kyiv, I felt myself good because I had a good job. I worked in a good salon. I fed my clients. But in Czech Republic, it's easier to earn money. You can do the same, but it's easier for you to earn money.
What can we do about it, if anything?
Here we came from also experience of those new member states of the European Union, because what was used by those people who have other reasons than just security is very close to reasons of labor migrants from Estonia or Lithuania or from Poland who went 20 years ago, when these countries joined European Union, to work in the United Kingdom, for example, in Ireland, etc. I even spoke to some former politicians from these countries. And generally, the idea was Ukraine to do everything possible to have this free movement of people that we in de facto have currently within this temporary protection as a preemptive freedom even before Ukraine joins European Union. Because as you rightly said, this temporary protection will end March 2025,
but they could extend it.
They could extend it, but not as easily as they extended it by one year, because generally this regime that was firstly used for Ukraine, it was designed only for 3 years. Nobody designed it for
longer period.
For a longer war.
So you mean freedom of movement, if they come back, they can leave again.
Yeah, okay. It's in fact very important to those who are either stuck in a job they're hugely overqualified for in countries they are residing now, Germany, Poland, Czech Republic, etc. And, for example, if we have better job opportunity in Ukraine, they could feel themselves safe to come back to take this job opportunity. But if something is not right, or, for example, security risks increase, they could go like back to safer country or to country where they could get better offer. So that's like to destroy this barrier for people to go back to Ukraine. And this also like another thing that requires not a political decision, but like some real investment on the ground is like doing everything possible for border crossing to become easier, because sometimes it's also a barrier. Like, for example, if the person wants to go to have an interview in Ukraine, and then like all this like trains, buses, etc., like starting from like this discussions that are currently in place about like reopening some of the airports, that's like is bigger thing to smaller things, but also like costly, and like those that need support from our partners in Poland, for example, to like move this like to make this movement of people as hassle free as possible.
If we cut and integration, reintegration back into the schools, help rebuilding if they lost their houses, so forth, all these are good. But would you still say that, I mean, the biggest thing that would bring people back to their homes, to the country that they love, and the country where they are very much needed now, is just the end of the war?
Yeah. It is like you have a group that is fully, like their biggest reason is security, mostly for their children. Still, even within this group, like you will, like, and we also see it, like from our segmentation, there are people who are integrating faster. There are people who are integrating that do not want to generally to integrate a lot, like those who have financial support from Ukraine, who have like remote job in Ukraine, who are patriotic, because this is also very important variable in this calculation. Like there are some people and like we should acknowledge it, who were dreaming about leaving Ukraine for a long time, who had like their like dreams about like nice life in some developed Europe, and like you did not like Ukraine at all and never trusted in the future of the country. Like there are some people, but there are also people who are
homesick.
Yeah,
they want to be where they are.
Who are homesick, but also like there is like certainly a field in between. When, like, for example, like people are generally patriotic, they generally came because of security reasons, but then like, oh, maybe school in this country is better than the school in Ukraine. Okay, like older children are going to universities, and like university is better than university in Ukraine, and diploma will be valued higher like from German university or from UK universities and from university in Ukraine. So you have like all this range of like different reasons.
We have complex
reasons.
Factors, both external, the war, internal, family dynamics.
And individual like for each family. Like, and yeah, as you mentioned also, like family things, like even relations and what we see, in the first wave, like we were not very good in like asking like what is the share of those refugees who have their like fathers of the family like here in Ukraine.
So they need ties.
Yeah, and like now in the last wave we did it like in a better way. And still we see that there is a minority. Like you could imagine that like in like the sort of popular perceptions that like you have this like wife and like children and like bags, suitcases, and like there is a father waiting for them in Ukraine. But generally those having fathers waiting for them in Ukraine and husbands are minority. So in some cases, like they manage to go as a family. In some cases, like fathers like found their way into other countries. And in some cases, like there were no husbands at all. Like there were like single women and single mothers who left at the first place.
Okay, that's very clear. I think we're going to have to leave it there. This is an important study, and thank you for taking your valuable time, Mr. Vyshulinsky, Executive Director, Center for Economic Strategy.
Thank you.
That's our program this week, and we're very glad you joined us. Remember, you can listen to Ukraine Calling on Hromadske Radio's website, on Ukraine Calling on our YouTube site, and also on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, and Amazon Podcasts. Thank you so much. Please subscribe. Please listen. Please watch. Have a great day.
Ukraine Calling.